Okay. You guys ready? Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. My name is Corey Davis. I cover specialty pharmaceuticals for Jefferies, and it's my pleasure to introduce our next company, Antares, and its CEO, Paul Watton. Antares has a very cool injection technology, but it's not just cool, as you're about to see. It's about to become very profitable, especially as they move from historically just a partnering model more towards a self-developed, self-sold drug model. And with that, I'll turn it over to Paul.
Okay, thank you, Corey, and I'd like to thank the organizers of this conference for inviting us to speak today. And it's a pleasure to be back in London after so many years. Our mission is to develop and commercialize self-administered parenteral medicines that optimize clinical benefits, and you'll see later on with methotrexate exactly why this is important. But our goal in life is to really make it as easy for a patient to be able to self-inject at home as it is to take a tablet or a pill today. Safe harbor statement for anyone who's interested in reading it. I'll move swiftly on. The background to the company: we're a revenue-generating company today. As Corey mentioned, we do have partnerships with companies like Teva, Pfizer, Watson, Ferring, for example, and Meda. And we derive development revenues and royalties from those companies. But as we started working on this project with this company a few years ago, we recognized that there's a significant amount of clinical and development expertise within our company that can be applied to developing combination drug device products for the future, and for products which would be focused on specialty pharmaceutical areas where we could commercialize these ourselves. Our track record is just shown here. Our self-administration technology has already received one FDA approval. It's also approved on the market here in Europe, which is a needle-free version of human growth hormone that's sold in this market by Ferring. And recently in the US, we just filed a supplemental NDA for a 10-milligram version of this drug, which we expect will allow Teva to expand their market share with that product. Our transdermal gel technology platform, which we actually sold a couple of years ago, but we retained all the rights to programs there for our royalty benefits later on in life. But we already have two programs there, Elestrin and Gelnic, already approved. So we know how to get products developed and approved through the agency. You'll see in a minute we have a very large pipeline for a company of our size. Currently there's only about 42 people in the company. All of our strategically important positions within the company, and we outsource things like the clinical development, obviously. And our first self-developed program, which is what we call the MediJet for methotrexate, we're anticipating filing an NDA on that one in the next few months. This is the pipeline here. You can see that we have a very advanced pipeline for a company of our size. Lots of late-stage assets there. We have programs that have already been marketed, tevtropin, hopefully tevtropin 10 milligrams soon, and then Gelnic and Elestrin have already been marketed. We also have other products which we've partnered with Teva, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. And then we move down to the rest of the pipeline, which includes two programs of our own, the MediJet methotrexate program and the QST, which is a testosterone injection for men intended for once-weekly administration. And that product should be going to the clinic sometime next year. We're the only company in the U.S. that has all three types of injection devices available. Needle-free is how we came into the market originally, but we developed from that an auto-injector platform which is designed to give drugs on an infrequent basis, say once a week or once a month, or even in an emergency situation, as is the case with the EpiPen. And we have this technology, as well as pen technology, which enables a patient to carry, say, a month's worth of medication around in their pocket with them, and then self-inject from that as well. And we're the only company that has all three platforms. It's all based on a strong intellectual property portfolio that we've been developing for just about 20 years now. But clearly the way for us to develop a more interesting company, I think, going forward, and a very exciting company, is to develop products for our own use and sell them ourselves in the United States. We will continue to partner our programs here in Europe and elsewhere internationally. The MediJet program, I'm going to talk at length about this in a minute. We just published some clinical data on that this week, which we will show you. QST, the testosterone, we'll talk about that briefly. And then we'll also just take you through the Teva partnership and the programs in that partnership. So this is the MediJet. This shows you at the top here the picture of the auto-injector. We have four different doses, 25, 20, 15, and 10 milligrams of methotrexate in that. So this device here contains a pre-filled syringe that's already loaded with the drug, and then it's a one-off device. You use the device to inject. The injection takes actually less than half a second to enter the subcutaneous layer, but we instruct patients to hold it onto their skin for 3 seconds. It's the only device, we believe, that's an auto-injector for self-administration of methotrexate. It's a disposable device, so you don't have to worry about sharps or anything else like that, which is increasingly important. And it's convenient. It's 3 easy steps for the patient to use, and you'll see in a few minutes from a study that we conducted how easy this is, in fact, to use. And even for patients who have severely deformed hands in rheumatoid arthritis, they were able to use this device very easily, which is very, very important, because a lot of these people have compromised hand function. It's virtually painless. You'll see later on in one of the studies, we just completed an actual human use study, which is using this device to deliver methotrexate in rheumatoid arthritis patients. And they're on a scale of 0 to 100 of a pain scale. The average score was only 3.6, which is nothing. It's negligible, which we think is important, because this obviously means that for any patient who's apprehensive about giving themselves an injection, once they've used this, they'll use it time and time again. And I can tell you, I've actually used this device with a placebo injection myself, and you don't feel a thing, literally. It's a very comfortable device to use. So this is just a summary of the overall sort of market for rheumatoid arthritis. In the US, it affects 1.5 million people. I've seen estimates going up to 2.5 million people. And it's the adult population, of whom about 1 to 2 thirds cannot tolerate all methotrexate doses once you get to doses above 12.5 milligrams and beyond. And what's important here is that rheumatologists in the US like to titrate up to a higher dose in, say, 20 milligram range. And that's not a range that you can give very effectively with oral methotrexate. It's widely considered to be the foundation of rheumatoid arthritis treatment. Methotrexate is an older drug. It was developed originally as a cytotoxic agent, but it finds use in a lot of these autoimmune conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, and the like. What happens is typically patients go on to an oral dose of methotrexate. They are unable to tolerate that dose eventually once they get above about 12.5 milligrams, and they get moved straight onto a biological treatment like Enbrel. And there's both a clinical need and I think also a healthcare cost need to try and delay the onset of use of a biological. And if you could make methotrexate more effective in that continuum of treatment, which is what we're aiming to do with this auto-injector version, then you can make it better for patients as a whole. We've also done a lot of work in terms of market research that shows that prescribers themselves would want to use more methotrexate injectable if there was an easy-to-administer version available for patients. So this is just a summary of some of the clinical work we've done. This is the human factors usability study. And for those of you who would like to understand how this process works with the FDA, for a drug-device combination, it's not just a matter of showing that the device can deliver the drug to the patient as well. You also have to design the device so that it's easy to use. So in this case, we conducted a usability study which uses a dummy device that actually doesn't give an injection. But you're able to show patients how to use it, and then you evaluate how easy it is for the patients to use. So we conducted a usability study. We actually published data on this in June of this year, I believe. And the results of this actually showed, which was the important piece, that the device itself was very easy for patients to use, even in those who actually had hand function impairment. And it was also easy to use for caregivers, whether they were professionally trained like nurses or patients who were actually living at home with someone else caring for them. And we had a very high success rate in terms of using the device, almost 100%. And users could quickly learn how to operate the device. This is an important study because the FDA requires this in order for you to get an approval. We then also did an actual human use study, which is a study involving rheumatoid arthritis patients self-administering methotrexate at various doses. We used all 4 doses that we have in development here. And the purpose of this was to basically, it's a safety study essentially, to make sure that patients can use the device, can safely administer methotrexate, and then evaluate the sort of effectiveness of things like the instructions for use manual that comes with the device. The results of the study showed that the self-administration of methotrexate is well tolerated. We saw no adverse events related to administration of the drug subcutaneously. And we were very happy with this. And as I mentioned earlier, the pain score when patients were actually injecting this was a nominal 3.6 on a scale of 0 to 100, which is almost negligible. Now, one thing that is going to come out of this program is that subcutaneous methotrexate has never been approved before in the United States for the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. We will be the first company to come out of the agency with an approval for subcutaneous administration of methotrexate, which gives us a unique advantage there. This is actually just showing you what I described earlier. On this graph here, we're showing what happens when you take... This is what happens when you take oral methotrexate. Is after about 15 milligrams, any increased dose of methotrexate at 20 or 25 milligrams, it plateaus off. And so the patient doesn't get the benefit of that incremental dose of methotrexate. When they take an injection, what you get is dose proportionality going on up, where you see increased systemic availability of the drug, which means it's more available to treat the disease itself in the bloodstream. And we think that there's a big benefit here because obviously even at 15 milligrams you're seeing better absorption with the dose of the drug from the MediJet system than you are with oral tablets. So once a patient is on the sort of 12.5 to 15 milligram dose, they should really move up to the subcutaneous administration. Even at lower doses here, which is 10 milligrams, you saw that the subcutaneous route, not surprisingly, gives you better absorption. And what physicians want in this is to be able to dose patients reproducibly and effectively with methotrexate. One of the things we noticed when we were doing the market research is that rheumatologists over the past few years have already increased their usage of methotrexate that's given by injection to patients for RA. But what they have to do is give them with a deep intramuscular shot, which is not something that most patients are able to do at home. You have to go to a clinic to get that by and large. Next slide. So the clinical summary is that we've conducted the human factor study, and that was very positive for us. The actual human use study has been completed. We've also done two, what are known as clinical pharmacokinetic studies, where you look at the systemic exposure of methotrexate following various routes of administration. And we also compared the drug to intramuscular as well as the oral. And what we see here is that basically the MediJet program is completed ahead of schedule, by the way, but it's very easy and safe for patients to use who have rheumatoid arthritis. And what doctors want is knowing precisely which dose of methotrexate their patients have been getting. And when you actually give an oral dose, you're never quite sure exactly what dose the patient is on. And there's probably a lot of people out there who are getting suboptimal doses of methotrexate. And what this enables us to do is basically optimize the dose of methotrexate that people will get. So the summary, all clinical trials have been completed with positive results. Our last study we announced this week. We had a meeting with the FDA just recently, which has basically reconfirmed the pathway we're taking towards filing the NDA. And in fact, just like the last speaker mentioned, this meeting took place towards the back end of the week where Hurricane Sandy hit the US, and our company's headquartered in New Jersey. We had no power for 10 days, but it didn't stop us going to see the FDA to make sure we kept that appointment with them. And all of the market research we've done has confirmed that the opportunity for this will address a significant unmet need. We had the American College of Rheumatology meeting this week over in Washington, D.C., and we attended that. We had a meeting with at least 15 key opinion leaders, a round table. And we were very enthusiastic about the future of this product for the U.S. The nice thing about this is that in the U.S., there's a very concentrated prescribing base of about 3,000 rheumatologists, which really means that you only need sort of 25 to 30 sales reps to target those. And we will be building out a commercial organization where we keep the strategically important positions in-house, and we'll be working with a company to manage the sales calls for us, and it's going to be a very aggressive effort, I can assure you. and we're looking at the second half of 2013 to implement the support infrastructure. So right now we're planning on filing the NDA within the next few months, and I'm anticipating that if everything goes to plan, we should be on the market at the beginning of 2014, assuming we get an approval for the product. One of the questions we get asked is, what is the clinical evidence for the use of methotrexate as a first-line therapy for rheumatoid arthritis? Well, in actual fact, a lot of the experience with subcutaneous methotrexate was developed over here in Europe, and we're applying this lesson to the United States. And there's about half a dozen studies here that show the use of methotrexate in RA, but particularly also what happens when you can switch from oral to subcutaneous methotrexate, which results in tight control of rheumatoid arthritis and avoiding the use of a biologic. And there's a number of studies like this that have actually been published recently in the literature. You can see that these are all quite recent, from 2008 onwards. And there was one study done here which was presented at EULAR this year, which was in March. It was actually from, I think, Maidstone Hospital in Kent here, who did a retroactive analysis of patients who've been on subcutaneous methotrexate compared to oral. And their conclusion was basically that subcutaneous methotrexate is more efficacious and better tolerated than oral methotrexate. And what they say there is really just crystallizing what we showed in that graph earlier, which is that methotrexate can prove difficult for patients to sustain when taken orally, either because of the side effects issues mainly. When you have a high dose of methotrexate you take orally, a lot of it gets left behind in the gut and doesn't get absorbed and cannot be used to treat the disease. You avoid that when you give subcutaneous shot using the Medijet. And at high doses, this is particularly true. To reduce side effects, they say subcutaneous methotrexate has been suggested as a next step after oral therapy fails. This is a step that goes in between a patient starting on oral methotrexate and then moving on to the more expensive biologic, which typically costs somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000 per patient per year in the United States. And we think that this is a real opportunity for a company like Antares to participate in a really large market in terms of dollar value, but carve out a nice niche for ourselves, and we anticipate that this product should be selling somewhere between $100 and $200 million within 3 years of starting to sell it. And it's a very cost-effective product to rep as well, given the focused nature of the prescriber base. Move on to testosterone. So one of the things that we noted was that there was a trend in the industry towards wanting to inject more viscous products. A lot of the antibody products, for example, are highly viscous to inject. And given the history of our company, which was based on using very strong and, I would say, over-engineered spring technology for the needle-free device, we designed an auto-injector that can deliver a highly viscous product through a fine-gauge needle, 27-gauge needle or even a 29-gauge needle. And at the same time, we were looking for another product to add to our pipeline, and we came across an opportunity for testosterone replacement, which in the United States is about a $1.6 to $2 billion market opportunity today, projected to grow to somewhere between $5 billion and beyond that, in fact, in 2017. A large piece of that market is for gel-based products like Androgel or Testin. But significantly, about one-third of the prescriptions are actually given towards injectable testosterone. And for this, men who need it go to a clinic every 2 or every 4 weeks to receive a deep intramuscular shot of an oily injection of testosterone. And what we were looking at was an opportunity to convert that to at-home use, which is what we're doing. And I believe because of the strength of the spring technology we have, coupled with the way that the pre-filled syringe is loaded into the auto-injector, which doesn't involve any shuttling of the pre-filled syringe, that we are one of the very few companies in this world that could actually deliver a viscous product through a fine-gauge needle. And that's what we're doing now. We've embarked on a program to develop this product. We've done a lot of market research around this, and we've actually shown that patients would really like to have an alternative to the gels. A lot of these guys in the US don't like using gels. You have to use them every day If it's a hot day, a lot of patients won't even put the gel on because if they're going off to play golf, it's inconvenient to have to deal with, for example, because it's very sticky. But a once-weekly shot was very appealing to the patients. It's also appealing to physicians because what they can do is give the patient about the right dose of testosterone every week, which is better than giving it to patients every 2 or every 4 weeks when patients get a disproportionately high Cmax or high level of the drug in the blood at the early part of the injection cycle. And then towards the end of that 2 or 4 week period, they have almost nothing left in the blood and then they go back. So you get this big swing in testosterone levels. If you modulate that by giving a once weekly injection, you can actually make it a much more attractive product in terms of its therapeutic effectiveness. So we've shown that in preclinical work that the auto-injector is actually a very viable product to use. We've done tests on it with the auto-injector with an oily vehicle in humans and shown that when you give an oil through our auto-injector, you can actually self-inject a product in an oil, which is a highly viscous oil, by the way, in 5 seconds or less. And you feel almost nothing. Again, it's just like the Vivex MTX. So I think as Corey was kind enough to use the word cool, but I think this is pretty cool technology, and it's also very discreet to use as well. So we'll also see, I think, a benefit here because the current gels on the market in the US have a black box warning on them. You're not allowed to sort of pick up your kids if you've just put the gel on in case you transfer testosterone to them or even come to contact with your wife soon after you've actually administered the gel because it will transfer. Testosterone does get absorbed and it will have side effects in those people as well. So we're really happy about this one going ahead. It's part of our pipeline build. I think this is going to be a significant opportunity for our company. Again, it meets our needs in terms of having a focused sales force, which is endocrinologists slash urologists. And we're anticipating that this product should be able to reach the market based on the development plan we've worked on. We should be launching this one sometime in 2016. Teva is, so we started out as a company looking at developing its business through a royalty stream, and Teva actually have 5 programs with us, and I'm sure most of you are familiar with who Teva is, but it's the largest Israeli pharmaceutical company in the world, one of the biggest providers of generic injectable products in the world today. Significantly, they also have a big branded business which they're continuing to build as well. And our products with Teva are a mixture of branded and generic products. It's a strong international partner for us. They've already launched the Tevtropin 5 milligram product in August 2009. The 10 milligram product is due to launch in 2013 as a result of the recent SNDA we just filed. And we get strong margins on device sales. We also get a mid to high single-digit royalty on overall product sales of HGH. Since Teva actually launched HGH as a needle and syringe, and I think this is a good story just to show you the benefit of having a really good device. Teva launched needle and syringe into a market with 5 other players that had devices, and these are big pharma partners, basically. Companies like Genentech, Lilly, for example, all sell HGH in the US. And they're all differentiated with the device. When Teva launched a needle and syringe into the market, they launched at a lower price, but only obtained a very small market percentage. It was about $20 million in a market that was over $1 billion in size. The T-Jet was launched with the needle-free injector in August 2009, and since then, their sales of the Tevtropin product have gone up by a factor of 4 to 5 times. Just because of the availability of the device. So we anticipate there'll be continued growth when they have the 10 milligram available next year. This is important because HGH is a drug that's prescribed on a milligram per kilogram basis. When you start out as a small charge, you obviously need less milligrams to start off with, but as you grow, you need to dose up in terms of the absolute number of milligrams the patient takes. And these kids are on this for 6 to 7 years. What happens is when they start going on to the higher doses, with the competitor products, they're able to switch to 10 milligrams and self-inject themselves. Now Teva's going to have that higher strength available as well. We have 2 single-shot disposable auto-injectors. This uses a similar, in fact, the same platform as the Vivex MTX MediJet product we just talked about. One of them, the generic EpiPen, is we had litigation on that one this year, and we've got a pending FDA approval, but the anticipated launch date on that is June 2015. That is an intramuscular injection of epinephrine. And we have an undisclosed product also in the pipeline with Teva, which is also an ANDA, a generic drug, if you will, a super generic, I think they call them over here, which we're anticipating gaining approval on within the next 12 months or so. Again, we get margins on device sales, and we get a mid to single digit royalty on that overall product sale. We have two pen injectors. These are the multi-dose pens that I mentioned, and we have one generic, which is an ANDA, and one branded product. Both of those are large products in the market today. The first one, we're anticipating filing an ANDA on that within 12 to 18 months. And there's a 505B2 program, which is a branded generic approach, if you will, with our second pen program, which Teva are actually developing first for the European market, because this is really very similar to a biosimilar drug. And over here in Europe, the rules are much clearer than they are currently with the FDA for approval of that type of entity. So we're anticipating a filing on that one fairly soon as well. This is a picture of the T-Jet needle-free device. This is the 10 milligram product. Patients actually keep this device for 2 years. It's good for 2 years' use. And what they need to do is replace, it's not shown here, but a needle-free injector head on that on a 3 to 7 day basis. It provides product differentiation, as I mentioned. In actual fact, this is out of date, so now fourfold at least in 3 years. But there's also a substantial market opportunity here in Europe, and Ferring actually have about a 12% market share of the HGH market over here in Europe. So we're hoping to see that repeated in the US. The epinephrine update, we always get asked this question simply because it was a litigation that made us quite visible. There's a product called the EpiPen in the US which sells today about $500-600 million worth of product for allergic reactions. And it's a very fast growing market indeed. The product is anticipated to grow somewhere to maybe north of $750 million by 2015 when we're anticipating launching this version with Teva. It's a seasonal market. The EpiPen itself, because of the stability of the drug in the device, patients have to buy a new one every year. In fact, they have to buy two because it's sold in a two-pack. And it's just the awareness of this issue in the U.S. has grown quite significantly, and I think that through Pfizer and Mylan, they've done a great job getting the products out there. We are the first to file a generic version of it. As I mentioned, we went through the litigation this year, and what we got out of that was basically a date certain of launch of June the 22nd, 2015, assuming we get approval from the agency on this one. Teva have a contractual commitment to buy devices from us in 2013 and 2014 in anticipation of that launch. And we also receive a milestone payment upon approval from Teva. And this is what I said earlier, that the analysts out there anticipate it could grow to $750 million or beyond now by 2015. So it's a large market opportunity. Cash position. One of the things that we did when we took this company over, the current management team, we cleaned up the balance sheet. If you'd have looked at Antares 4 years ago, our market cap as a company was about $27 million. We had less than $5 million of cash on the balance sheet. We had a loan. Today, our market cap is probably around the 450 range. We have no debt. We have right now over $80 million of the cash. And in fact, we just raised $53 million with Jefferies this fall. I have to say, I think it was a pretty quick transaction for us to conduct the roadshow. It only lasted 2.5 hours, and we were pulled off, and the whole deal was financed. But in actual fact, the growing revenue base we've got here is also what we've tried to focus on, is growing the business, being good at generating business, but also reinvesting that money back into the pipeline, because it's the pipeline of this company which is going to be important for us moving forward. We're looking at a third program to add to that pipeline. We feel that right now we're at the leading edge of this drug-device combination market opportunity. And in order to make the most of it, you've got to really act fast. Revenue growth this year, we're expecting to see 30 to 50% growth and we're on track to meet that. Last quarter, in actual fact, we did $5.7 million in revenue. So this is the crux of what makes Antares tick. It's the fact that we believe that over the next few years, there's going to be one product on average per year launched from the pipeline. This year we started off with Gelnic 3%, which is sold by Watson in the United States. This was a product which we developed for overactive bladder, but we licensed it to Watson in 2011. And we got the FDA approval for that in December of 2011. And it was launched in halfway through the second quarter of this year. Right now, Gelnic is actually doing well. Watson have about one-third of their prescriptions now for gels actually goes to our product. They had a 10% version on the market of their own. But now our product seems to be growing very nicely. Thank you very much. The 2013 potential launch is the Tevtropin 10 milligrams and the Vivex 2 product, as I mentioned earlier. 2014 is when we're anticipating launching the MTX MediaJet ourselves. It was really important for us to be able to control the destiny of that product in terms of being able to look at how we control the marketing message, because it needs to be very consistent with what we want to achieve for the other pipeline products going forward. We have 2015, the launch of Vivex Epi and the Teva Pen 2 here in Europe. And then 2016, QST, the testosterone product, our other Teva Pen program. And we also have a product which we licensed to Pfizer in December last year, which is an OTC product, which we just received a $750,000 milestone for that. We're not at liberty to disclose what it is, but it's a large OTC opportunity, and that one is also anticipated to go to market in 2016. And we received the milestone payment following the results of a successful meeting that Pfizer had in fact had with the agency with a view to what the ongoing clinical development program was going to look like. So all in all, I think our pipeline is loaded. We have multiple shots on goal, as they say, with respect to the opportunities for us going forward. And I think that the future really hasn't ever been better for Antares in terms of its potential. This is just a few of the milestones that we can expect to target for the next 12 to 18 months. The NDA filing on methotrexate, the clinical study starting on the testosterone, the other programs with Teva continuing to advance. We have the approvals of the auto-injector products with Teva. We are in discussions with a number of companies on international partnerships for methotrexate with the MediJet. And we're also looking to have two additional pipeline programs. As I mentioned earlier, 10 milligram Tevtropin should be getting approved and launched within the year. And we're now busy just implementing the support infrastructure we need for the methotrexate MediJet product to go to market. I mean, last but not least, there's also the launch of our own product, Methotrex MediJet, in 2014. It's been a really sort of good few years that we've been together as a team managing this company. We've really done very well, and I'm anticipating that we'll continue to execute and be very, very focused as we go through the next few years. That's it. So in a nutshell, that's Antares. Thank you very much for paying attention. And if there's any questions, I guess we can take them now.
Yeah, we've got about 7 minutes if there's questions here. So it's not immediately intuitive, at least to me, that a patient would want to take an injection instead of a pill for methotrexate. So the question is how well accepted is it going to be among rheumatologists that giving a higher dose of methotrexate will lead to better efficacy without any side effects?
Yeah, that's an important question, Corey. So one of the things that we noticed when we were looking at this opportunity was that if you look from 2006 onwards, in terms of the methotrexate prescriptions each year in the United States, the use of injectables had grown from 4% to 8%. And there was a reason for that, which was rheumatologists had already worked out that actually giving parenteral methotrexate was favorable for some of their patients. In fact, in the market research we did, we were told in round tables, but also through the primary work we did with the rheumatologists, that if there was a self-administration version of methotrexate available, they would actually double or treble the number of prescriptions that they would write for injectable methotrexate. And the challenge was that Methotrexate today is available in a needle and syringe coming out of a vial, which a patient would have to do themselves at home. But it's a cytotoxic agent as well, so you really need to handle it very, very carefully. And training patients to do that is very difficult. Patients who are on methotrexate today, injectable, if they get an intramuscular injection, more than half of those continue to go to the doctor's office for an injection of methotrexate every week. So there's quite a lot of cost and time involved in that. So the efficacy is well understood by rheumatologists. It's actually making it practical for them to be able to make their patients do that was the issue. And what we're doing is enabling them to do that more.
A similar sort of question on the payers. Again, it seems intuitive to us that if you can avoid going on to the very expensive biologics, that's a compelling cost-effective argument.
Mm-hmm.
But in the absence of hard data from your product showing that you can stay on methotrexate longer, how hard is it going to be to get reimbursement?
Well, I think the beauty of this program is that there's a lot of evidence over here in Europe. In fact, there's a paper published here in the UK not so long ago that showed that if the average rheumatology patient was put on subcutaneous methotrexate, because it's an approved product here in Europe, after they've not been able to tolerate oral, that patients would be able to go for a period of at least 6 months without having to switch to a TNF-alpha biologic. At an average cost savings to the NHS, I'm speaking from memory here, but I think it was about £5,000 during that switch period. So, you know, and I've seen evidence that patients could be retained on methotrexate for anywhere from, say, 6 months to 3 years without having to go to a biological agent. The other thing about the biologics is that patients do have to rotate the biological agents when they're on them. For one reason or another, their side effects profile is also still being understood. And physicians like methotrexate because it's a well-understood drug and they know what they're getting with it. So there's also clinical reasons to try and retain the use of the biological for as long as possible in the cycle of in the treatment of RA. The other thing that happens is that methotrexate is also co-prescribed with these biological agents as well, and a lot of patients are actually self-administering by injection with an auto-injector, a drug like Cimivir, for example, but they're taking methotrexate either orally, where it's probably subtherapeutic doses, or they're having to go for an intramuscular shot at the clinic. And the average cost, by the way, of an intramuscular shot at the clinic, we estimate to be somewhere around $125 a week.
Time for one more question. Just, I'll ask on testosterone.
Hmm.
How lengthy, how extensive, how risky does the clinical program need to be? And you have Avid at Endo that everybody thought was going to be approved, but they ran into troubles with the FDA. So how do you avoid that problem?
Yeah, I think one of the benefits of doing a once-weekly injection is you're not putting a depot into the system, number one. The second thing is that we do have a meeting with the agency coming up to clarify the path forward for the QST product. I would imagine, based on current information that I have, that the development program is going to be of a similar length, about 18 to 24 months, once you're in the clinic, as it was for methotrexate. I think one of the beauties of this path that we've pioneered to some extent is that it's a very rapid way to develop 505B2 products as NDAs using the drug-device combination. And what we're about is really making these older but very effective drugs much more accessible and even more effective in the case of methotrexate.
Great. So with that, we'll wrap it up. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks to Paul for presenting.
Thank you, Corey.